What up, what up, what up? Back again for another great show, FTN Fantasy Show. This is a very important week for those who've made it because we've been marked safe from the loser's bracket. I don't know about everybody else, but if you were still tuned in, if you were still tapped in and locked into me, Okada, with Do or Die Week, this is real. This is what we need to really strap up, get your Rambo, you know, markings or whatever. I don't know if you've seen that movie. Did you, Okada? Yep. Is that a movie you've seen? Okay. Some people have never seen Rambo. I asked because, like, I asked some of my friends, like, what are some movies that, you know, that are cult followings? And Rambo happened to be the conversation. But we are here for the fantasy playoffs. Okay. Okada, of course, each and every week you come in with the need to knows. What do we need to know for week 15?
First of all, even if you haven't seen Rambo, everybody knows who Rambo is, I feel, right?
I sure hope. He's a cultural
icon.
Now, my one friend, I don't want to put him on blast, okay? He thought Arnold Schwarzenegger
put him Rambo. On blast.
He thought it was Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I'm like, bro, close, but no, wrong action hero,
nope,
okay?
Nope. All right, we got a few things to know this week, Quan. I mean, we've got a lot because it's playoffs week. Quarterfinals for most leagues, obviously. So there's a lot of crucial stuff. But we'll start with this one. And I'm very curious to get your input on it as the representative of the Ramley. Blake Corum is a problem. But the question is a problem for who? Because the initial instinct reaction is that he's a problem for Kyren Williams and Kyren Williams managers. However, last week, they were both good. So maybe he's just a problem for the opponents of anyone who has Blake Corum. Here's what I'm... he's been suddenly quite good these last couple weeks and was amazing last week against the Cardinals. 12 carries, 128 rushing yards, and 2 touchdowns on the ground. That was 12 carries to 13 for Kyren. So it's basically a 50-50 split. But Corum looked unbelievable. And as is the case with lots of things like this throughout the year, you could just write that off as a fluke week, a strange week where they knew that Corum was a good match for the Cardinals or that the Cardinals wouldn't prep for the second running back or whatever it was. That would be the thought if it weren't for comments from Mike LaFleur, the offensive coordinator for the Rams, that they were specifically hoping to keep Kyren Williams fresh for the playoffs.
Yes, sir.
Concerning. So I believe that this is a sign of true things to come over the last few weeks, which is that we will have more of a 50-50 split in LA. Sometimes that means that they'll both be good, like this last week, but I am very worried that that is not going to be the case the next couple weeks of the playoffs, because in week 13, Corum got a little bit of a boost because Kyren missed a little bit of time. In week 14, they both were great because they had a lot of garbage time work against the Cardinals. They were blowing the doors off the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. And neither of those teams are particularly good run defenses. The Seahawks and the Lions are their next two matchups. They're not blowing the doors off either of those teams.
Yes, we are.
I believe the Rams are the best team in the NFL and have been for most of the year. But really good teams. I feel like it's going to be much more competitive. So there's not going to be as much garbage time work to go around. That means that the even split might hurt both in fantasy. So I am worried. I think you're still starting Kyren this week until we see how things go. But I would not start Corum this week until we see how things go. As the representative of the Ramley, I need to know your thoughts.
So I'll say this, nail on the head, right? I would say this week I'm a little hesitant of starting Corum because of the matchup. I'm a little hesitant of putting him in lineups over guys like a Quinshon Judkins, over guys that we have been reliable at the wide receiver position. I'm talking flex, right? Like a Chris Olave. Like, they're still like, I don't know yet. I'll say this, though. Real life football, McVay is trying to keep Kyren fresh because, one, we're playing football in February. Two, the ankle injury in week 13 was a little alarming, but it was one of those things where he said he's good to go. Now we're in the time now where I go back 8 months ago. 8 months ago, like, I'm talking literally before anybody was even speaking about this Rams backfield being a dynamic duo. This is the only way this is going to work. The Rams are currently a top 10 rushing attack. The last time we were a top 10 rushing attack was 2020. And that's when we had the multi-back system. And who do you know was on the coaching staff that year? Oh, Liam Cohen. And this offseason in August, we were hearing that McVay was singing the praises of Liam Cohen, how he was able to utilize that Tampa Bay backfield in a multi-back system. Voila, here we are, a multi-back system with Blake Corum and Kyren. He is building Blake Corum's confidence right now. Okay. He's giving him the touches. He's giving the opportunity. He's getting the valuable touches in the red zone, but so is Kyren. This is going to be a backfield that is going to be splitting. For fantasy, this could be very scary when you have opponents like Detroit, when you have opponents like the Seattle Seahawks on a short week. And that short week, this is where I have to put you in a pause here. Oh. On that short week, I'm starting Blake Corum against Seattle. I'm starting Blake Corum because they're not going to see this punch coming, because I think the Lions, we should be able to handle them. They're middle of the pack type of defense. I think Kyren should be fine. But here's the thing. Reason why Blake Corum looked so good against the Cardinals, because we were seeing his superpower be on display. The explosiveness, the long ball. He could take it to the house. He's a savvy runner. He's in and out of the tackles. Like, he looks great bouncing out of the tackles, but Kyren is still that in between the tackles, bouncing off of yards after contact. That's his side. This is Goten and Trunks. I don't know if you watch Dragon Ball Z Okada, but these are the twins, okay? When they fusion, they are one complete back. They are very similar, okay? So this is going to be a backfield you're going to have to monitor all through the playoffs. These next 3 weeks, if you play in Week 18, leave that league. I will rage quit. I will crash out. You should not be playing Week 18. But these next 3 weeks, this is something you want to monitor. But Seattle, I'm starting Blake Corum. I feel real good about it, Okada.
Okay. Okay. I like it. All right. Let's get to number two. This one, less positive.
Oh, God.
Baker Mayfield. I got to listen. It's got to be a little of both. We got a little of both.
Yes.
Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers passing attack is on a really nasty skid that I think is being overlooked. Just how bad it is. Now, qualifier to this is that Mike Evans and Jalen McMillan are both supposed to be back this week, active, off IR. Will that help? I'm not convinced that it will, because it's not like Baker hasn't had good receivers. He's just been honestly broken the past month or so. Yeah, it has been ugly. So I think a lot of people remember early in the year when Mayfield was great, and Emeka Ibuka was dominating fantasy, and may not have taken a moment to review just how bad it's been these last couple months. Baker Mayfield has scored fewer than 15 fantasy points in five of his last seven games, and he threw one or fewer touchdowns. That's one or zero, Laquan, in six of those seven games, and he's thrown four picks over the last 4 weeks instead. He's been short of 200 passing yards in four straight games, and that includes that Week 12 game against the Rams where he suffered that shoulder injury. Had two picks in that game before he left. Yeah, that I think might still be hampering his play. Based off how poorly he's playing since then, I am concerned, sort of like Lamar in the injury that he had and how it was holding his play down. Maybe he's getting a little healthier from that now. But Baker, I have not seen that yet. Meanwhile, Ibuka, one game with more than 8 fantasy points in his last 8 appearances.
Yo, that is mid-season till now. Oh, my God.
That is legitimate must-sit territory. Forget like, oh, he's a must-start wide receiver 1, or, oh, he's still flexible wide receiver 2, flex kind of guy. Yeah. No. That is must-sit territory. You cannot play him right now. Is Mike Evans going to draw attention that somehow opens the door for Ibuka to be good again, despite the fact that it'll see less targets? Maybe, but I don't have any confidence in that. So until I see Baker start to support this passing game better, to increase the entire pie significantly, I am going to be very worried about any singular piece in that pie, especially with the fact that we're now splitting those pieces up even further. And I'm very worried about starting Baker Mayfield himself. I would be looking to sit most, if not all, of these guys. Now, they play tonight as we record this. Will this release it will before be out. Thursday Night Football?
It'll be out.
Okay.
It'll be out.
So if you listen to this right when it releases, I do not expect them to be very good tonight. If you listen to this on Friday.
Bold prediction.
Look back at that game and you tell me what you see. If Baker got everything back on track, great. I'll be more positive about the outlook moving forward, but I don't see it right now. They've been really struggling, and I'm concerned about the playoff stretch.
Let me ask you about this, though, because this is two division games back-to-back. This week, next week, let's say you make it to the second round, right? You sit Ibuka, you skate in, whatever the results tonight are what they are. I want to ask you this, though. With Mike Evans coming back, I spoke about how Mike Evans can possibly bring stability back to the offense. And what I mean by that is, like, Baker gets his guy. You know, Emeka Ibuka, he sees the number twos of the defenders and, you know, who are going to be covering him and shadowing him. A dynamic where we have Chris Godwin back. Like, this makes me think, like, if Emeka Ibuka really has that versatility where he could play in the slot and out wide, do you think that kind of adds that magic the first 3 weeks of the season with him being alternated in and out of the slot with Godwin now? Like, does that make you feel like usage or volume will be the same and maybe some upside? Like, I'm just curious at this dynamic that we're going to see tonight of this Bucs offense.
It's possible that it helps simply because it gives Baker his safe, quote unquote, safest, like most trustworthy target back.
Yeah. But
that also requires Mike Evans to be what he has been in years past. And I'm not sure that he is. I wrote, it might have been in an FTN Dynasty trade article before the season, but certainly it was in a number of things I wrote in the offseason, that I think Evans was on the downturn of his career. I think exactly. We saw that last year. He lost a ton of efficiency, and I think it bled over into the start of this year. He saw a lot of targets in those first 3 weeks, Laquan, but a 43.8% catch rate. That's terrible.
What are we that doing, Mike?
Doo-doo. So, and Ibuka didn't have he had strong games those first 3 weeks, primarily through touchdowns, but he didn't have his true breakout games until the 2 weeks after Evans got hurt. So, I think it feels to me a little bit like wishful thinking to believe that Evans' return is going to fix this offense, but it's not impossible. I just don't see it right now. I would be very nervous to play any of them right now.
Interesting, man.
Except for Bucky.
I'm curious to see how this turns out tonight. What's your number three need to know for week 15, though?
Let's go to another NFC West team that we briefly touched on for a second there, Laquan. The Seahawks backfield is hurting.
Oh, boy.
It is hurting fantasy managers, I think, somewhat quietly. And I think very sadly, because
slow burn.
You and I both liked Kenneth Walker at parts coming into this season. But you know who doesn't like Kenneth Walker? Mike McDonald and the Seahawks offensive play calling crew, because they are perfectly splitting the work and the goal line work in particular of this duo such that neither can be trusted in fantasy. Like, it's just so perfectly split to make both of them untrustworthy. Walker has scored single-digit fantasy points far more often than not this season. 7 of his last 9 games, he's been in single digits. And then Zach Charbonnet, despite the fact that he has vultured 8 touchdowns this year, he has not been really that much more reliable at all. Single digits in half of his games, and he's only topped 15 fantasy points once all year because Kenneth Walker carries all the upside. So Charbonnet never gets enough work to carry the true upside because Walker's always there doing that. And then Charbonnet steals all the goal line work to take away Walker's upside and even some of his floor sometimes. And they're just perfectly poaching each other in those two ways so that neither is reliably useful. I think we need to stop starting them. I think a lot, particularly Walker. I don't think many people were starting Charbonnet. They were holding on to him in hope, and you can continue to do that. But it's particularly with Walker, who I think a lot of people have been continuing to roll out on the hope that he would have one of his big games. I think we need to stop because the odds just say too much that he's going to have one of his bad games so much more often than not that he's just hurting your fantasy lineup by fooling you into thinking he's going to be good this week and then he's not.
Here's the problem. Like, do you remember when it was Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren just eating each other alive in this backfield and it was just one of those things like, of course, both of them are going to average at least 10 fantasy points per game. And that's what ended up happening. And I look at this backfield as where they're very close in points per game, where I look at the Seahawks rushing attack is not even that great. They're ranked 18th, middle of the pack, near the bottom of the table when it comes to a rushing attack. Please, please bring logic here to me of why do they keep this split when the more talented, more efficient, more explosive back, more red zone success is not getting the ball where it matters. Why is he not getting RB1 workload? I understand the injury history is there, but let him crash out. It's his contract year. Like, I don't get it. Like, it's one of the more frustrating things when we know a player's talented and then he is held and capped by the coaching staff and it doesn't make sense. And I knew something was up once we got close to week one and like the reports in the summertime, like they're feeling frustrated because he was banged up. He had a toe injury or something like that. It was something weird. It was something that wasn't keeping him off the field, but they were limiting him. So I feel like the frustration is there. We can already just put it in our head. Like, he's not going to be there. He's not going to be there next year. So all the dynasty folks with Kenneth Walker, I'm holding until, let's say we get closer to March to kind of see what the free agency looks like, kind of hear the rumblings and make our decisions around there because I think his time in Seattle are pretty much donezo. Okada, I know you got one more. It's week 15, baby. It's playoffs. We have to lock in. Need a number four need to know for week 15.
I got a number four for you, and it's one another name that we were both in on in the offseason, but this one is doing the opposite of Kenneth Walker. He is on his way up. Started from the bottom. Now he's here, and it is RJ Harvey. RJ Harvey has been dominant the past couple weeks. Obviously, now with J.K. Dobbins on IR, and we knew it the second that signing happened, we knew it was going to be a problem. When RJ Harvey was drafted, we all got super excited, and then when J.K. Dobbins was signed, we all wept in our sleep because we knew this was going to be a problem for Harvey, and it was most of the year. It is no longer, and now back-to-back weeks, 19 plus fantasy points for Harvey. He scored 3 touchdowns over those 2 games. He's super involved as a receiver. He's super involved and very effective in the red zone. He has been smoking hot. However, this is another one of the good and bads, Laquan, because I have to bring the truth with the optimism.
Not with Harvey.
Yes. These last 2 weeks have been against the Commanders and the Raiders. This may be a spoiler, but they're not very good on defense. You know who is good on defense, particularly against the run? The Packers, the Jaguars, and the Chiefs. Those are his 3 matchups to end the year. They are all dark red, ugly running back matchups.
So wait, do I start him this week?
I think you still start him. So what I wrote in the article this week, in the thing to know, is that his involvement in the passing game, I think, gives enough reason for optimism, as does his excellence in the red zone, that you're still going to play him. But I see him as more of a low-end RB2 rather than the high-end RB1 he's been these past 3 weeks. And if you probably didn't draft him as your second or third running back. Maybe your third. But you probably didn't draft him as your second running back. And there's a bunch of other things that have happened throughout the year. So if you have 2 good running backs who are top 15 this week, it's possible Harvey, either goes to the flex or does go to the bench, depending on your situation. I don't think he's a must bench. I do like him still, but it just needs to be noted, and we have to pay attention to these things throughout the year. Someone is great against really good matchups, and then suddenly they have really bad matchups. We have to account for the gap that we're likely going to see in his production between those two. So I needed to point that out to listeners.
Yeah.
Be prepared. I'm still playing him in most places, but be prepared.
I'll say this, like, you're probably eyeing him as a flex this week, but with RB2 expectations, which I can feel really, really good about that in my flex, right? If I don't have any other options, if I'm looking at guys on the bench that have been collecting dust, if I'm looking at any Bears wide receiver, I'm going Harvey, because I think everything we have seen has been proven, even though it's bad defenses, but this is what he was supposed to do against a bad defense, right? I think that the challenge you bring on with Harvey, we know the talent is there. We know Sean Payton will design throws in the red zone where valuable touches are there on the table for him, that I think even in a tough matchup, RJ Harvey still prevails as a fantasy starter. Okada, do you have a bonus? Is there something else that needs to be said for week 15? Need to know?
I have. This is the most important one, perhaps, of all, Laquan. I have a bonus thing to know for everybody. This is a special dear to our heart as fantasy analysts thing to know, because the listeners need to be aware that this is the truth. Sometimes in fantasy football, we don't know diddly squat. We think we know, and we just freaking do not. This past week was the example of the year when Tony Pollard, Mr. half of a lackluster running back committee in the worst offense in the NFL, who hadn't topped 14 fantasy points once all year and hadn't reached double digits in 9 weeks, facing the Cleveland Browns, who are one of the better run defenses in football.
Yes, in the snow.
Suddenly had 161 yards and 2 touchdowns? Huh? He had 2 explosive run touchdowns from outside the red zone, which he hadn't done at all in years. Like, there, if you find me, somebody please go and scour the internet to find me any person, any fantasy analyst, who said last week going into the games, Tony Pollard is a great start this week. He's going to have a sudden breakout. No. Sometimes things just happen that make absolutely no MF sense, and we will never understand. We'll never have an explanation. It's the way of the league, the way of the NFL, and it can't be predicted, explained, figured out. It's the way of the world. So something will probably happen this week that will make no sense. Maybe Kenneth Walker will suddenly have 30 carries. I doubt it, but this stuff happens. And we have to be aware and willing to accept it.
Okada, do you understand the last time that the Browns defense got ripped like that, right? I'm talking big numbers, over 150 yards. It was Austin Eckler, week 5 of 2022. This is Chargers Austin Eckler ripping them for 173 yards. On 16 carries. He was balling that day, right?
Good gracious.
Here we are looking at Tony Pollard in 2025, who has done absolutely nothing, right? I remember the Titans and Rams game where he put up 90 yards. He looked good. He looked explosive. He looked motivated, but we still, like, all right, chill out. Hold up now, right? But this was completely out of nowhere. And the thing is that before that game, I was on the FTN Fantasy TikTok Live. Somebody asked me, hey, do I start Quinshon Judkins or Tony Pollard? Ah, are you crazy? You're starting Quinshon Judkins. Why is Tony Pollard still rostered? Why are you even trying to even think about this? This is going to be a heavy run agenda with Quinshon Judkins against a bad Tennessee Titans run defense where the Browns have been locking up all season long against running backs. And here we are, folks. Here we are sitting here looking silly. This is probably one of the biggest facts of this business of being a fantasy analyst, because sometimes we don't know jack ish. Okay. Mm-mm. Sometimes things like this happen and we can't explain it. Right. It's like the crop circles. We cannot explain how that happened. Right. It's aliens. Like, it's one of those things where you're just sitting there watching, like, I'm dreaming. This is an old clip. This is a highlight from last year. Right. Or 2 years ago. Right. Like, no, this happened, folks. And sometimes we don't know anything. But I want to transition into burning questions for week 15. It is do or die. Folks, lock in, okay? Off the top, this has been one of the more disappointing seasons for Justin Jefferson. It has been one of the hardest things to watch him in starting lineups as a first round investment, as in some leagues as Mr. 101. Are you starting Justin Jefferson against the Dallas Cowboys this week?
The fact that you even ask that question, Laquan, is a sign of how bad he has been. I tweeted something this week, and I'm curious your take. Maybe you can tell me after I break this Jefferson thing down, of whether him or Brian Thomas Jr. is the bigger bust, because both of them have been such massive, horrendous busts this year.
Yeah.
Here,
we get to that.
Here's I have this. Justin Jefferson in my article, Laquan, as a thing to know. I didn't bring it into the
check
top,
it out at ftandfantasy.com, folks. Facts.
but number six in the article, you have my permission to bench Justin Jefferson no matter the matchup. Now, let's qualify that briefly. There is no better matchup than the Dallas Cowboys. So if Justin Jefferson is ever going to do anything this year, it would be this week. But to those who drafted him where they drafted him and have never even considered taking him out of their lineup because he's freaking Justin Jefferson, so they don't even look at how many points he's scoring. They just, Justin Jefferson's not on bye. There you go, into my wide receiver one slot. It's automatic. Listen to these numbers. He has scored one touchdown since week two. One touchdown since week two. It was against the Lions in week nine. He has not hit 9 half PPR fantasy points in any of the 5 weeks since that score. 5 straight weeks without even hitting 9 fantasy points.
You know what's crazy, though? Weeks, put a pin in that real quick. You know what's crazy, though? Okay. In those last 5 weeks, we've had the fantasy trade deadline. I think on this show, we were discussing, like, hey, if you could trade him, you can get a haul back. Like, this guy's name still sells. Like, I'm really curious of how many teams have actually made the playoffs that held Justin Jefferson or even traded for Justin Jefferson. Like, I want to know who is in the room with us right now. I think this is a poll question that we should get off on the FT and Fantasy Twitter. Like, I need to know who I'm speaking to, because everything you just said to me sounds really, really scary. Since week two, he has one touchdown. This is Justin Jefferson we're talking about.
Yes.
In the last 5 weeks, folks, that's more than a month, right? Like, I'm sitting here thinking about this. This is Justin Jefferson. If he doesn't do anything this week, what week will it be? Because now we have to start shaping. What does 2026 look like? Because J.J. McCarthy is more often than not probably going to be rolling out week one as the starter. And again, I don't have time for this, bro. I don't have time for a quarterback project for a high investment draft pick that we have in Justin Jefferson. Like, Okada, like, I don't know. If it doesn't happen this week, when will it happen?
Probably never, because like I said, this is the best matchup. Now, both of the next two matchups are also great matchups. So for the sake of anyone who did scrape it in the playoffs with Justin Jefferson, I hope he goes off this week. I will say, to your point, Laquan, I would guess he's probably one of the most highly rostered players for teams that miss the playoffs.
Ooh,
because he was the first-round pick for all those teams, and then they kept starting him all year every week, and he kept hurting you. Like, that's the worst possible situation.
I don't care. I'll say it. I do not care about who it is, what their name is, what they've done in the past. What have you done for me now? I am so against of, like, this guy. It's Justin Jefferson. It's Jamar Chase. They are a must start. No, if you've been giving me booty, I am not going to put you in starting lineups, because it's my decision at the end of the day, and I cannot ignore what I've seen. Okada, I'm with you that this is the best matchup, but I'm not with you in starting him. I am sitting him. I am sitting him. I'm going to die on this hill. This will be a sword worth falling on, because at the end of the day, I don't see many folks out there in the fantasy playoffs with Justin Jefferson.
I'm completely fine with it. I am open and willing to see him on every bench. I wrote at the end of the blurb in the article that I would start Jacoby Myers over Justin Jefferson.
That sounds insane. Oh, my God.
Crazy work, but it is where we're
at. Wow. Wow. No, I'm not against it, though. No. Like, as crazy as this sounds. But to answer your Brian Thomas Jr. question, bigger bust. Yes. I would say Justin Jefferson is the bigger bust because of two things. 101, most likely in some leagues. The first three picks we can lock in, right? Number two, being that Kevin O'Connell, being who he is as a head coach, the culture over there, the QB whisperer that we labeled him as, self-proclaimed, whatever the case may be, of what he thinks he is. I look at it like this. We were duped. We were, like, set up for failure with Justin Jefferson right now. So his bust hurts a lot more than a Brian Thomas Jr. For us, some of us on this show was saying, it ain't Mac Jones. It is Trevor Mid. Yes. Lawrence throwing that ball. I had my hesitations. I had my precautions for that. So I don't feel any of that Brian Thomas Jr. burn, because at the end of the day, I would say this. If you took him at the early second round, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the 106, the 107, and the 108 folks in that middle round of where he started to creep up. And I was like, that's too high. I'm out.
It's ugly. It's rough.
I love your response. It's ugly. It's sad. But let's get to another burning question. Dalton Kincaid, he's back in town. The Bills, they obviously don't have wide receivers outside of Khalil Shakir. Do we get a tight end performance this week? Because I think he is very much needed in the fantasy streets.
I would believe we get a tight end one performance from Dalton Kincaid. Now, it's... Well, looking back at last week is very tough to assess things because A, it was his first week back. B, it was against the Bengals. And we can never know what to expect or what to spin forward from tight ends against the Bengals. But in that game, Dawson Knox was very, very involved to the point that it kept Dalton Kincaid from being incredible. But he was still good because he scored a touchdown. And he caught four of his five targets for 41 yards. I like all of that.
Awesome.
I believe they will be throwing the ball to keep up with the Patriots this week. So I think Dalton Kincaid will get some catches. I think he is a mid-range tight end one. Not a stud necessarily, but a mid-range tight end one who you're starting over pretty much all of the fringy streamer guys.
So would you do Dalton Kincaid over Harold Fannin Jr.?
That's very close, because Harold Fannin Jr. is also climbing out of that streamer guys tier with what we've seen from him recently.
Yeah.
I would probably... Do we know if there's any weather in either of these games?
It's in Chicago, so I would assume that it's going to be a little bit brisk. But
it's going to be freezing. And it's going to be also very negative cold 10? For the Patriots with a chance of snow. Not quite. It's 11 degrees.
Oh, it's not negative 10, but it's just 11 degrees. Jeez, I was joking. And it's 11. How do people even operate outside below 40 degrees? I cannot move anymore. And listen,
Did you see Tom Brady's outfit this last week?
No. What was he wearing?
Oh, my gosh. I think he had the Packers game, and it was like 7 degrees or something. You should look it up. He looks hysterical. He looks like Darth Vader. He had like 15 layers of all black, like leather and fluff gear on.
Oh, my God. He looks ridiculous.
You found it already.
Yes. he looks ridiculous. He was not playing. I am blaming
him. I think I'm going to lean towards Dalton Kincaid on the trust of the better, more reliable and trustworthy quarterback. The higher total in that game, betting total, I'm not even looking at them. I'm just assuming that because it's Browns versus Bears and then it's Bills versus Patriots. Slightly better, slightly less freezing. And I think there will be more throwing for the Bills. So I would lean towards Kincaid, but it's very close.
All right. I say that because I don't know why, but a lot of Harold Fannin Jr. was on the waiver wire this week. Like, I'm really like questioning the folks in those leagues. Like, why was he still available? Like, okay. But a lot of people are in situations now where Dalton Kincaid is back. He started the season off strong. If they just picked up Harold Fannin Jr. or if they picked up a Colston Loveland, which I don't recommend either this week, but I'm looking at Dalton Kincaid maybe as the savior, maybe as the savior to be a serviceable tight end one. Transitioning to the quarterback position, somebody who has not been great, Tua Tagovailoa. has not been fantasy startable. Is he startable this week?
Laquan. Let me tell you, let me paint you a little picture, if I may.
Okay.
In the things to know this week, I wrote about Jordan Love. I have written about Jordan Love a couple times over the past few weeks, and I talked about him on this podcast last week. You started him against the Bears, then sit the ever-living daylights out of him this week against the Broncos because he stinks in bad matchups, and then play him again next week against the Bears, right?
Yeah.
I am sitting Jordan Love this week for guys as bad as like Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders. That's how much I'm sitting Jordan Love. However,
yikes.
I have a dynasty league where I have Jordan Love and Tua Tagovailoa as my two options in the Superflex slot.
You going to take that shot?
I'm sitting both of them to play. Who am I playing? I think it's a running back. It might be Kyle Manunga or someone. No.
Wow.
Oh, who is it? I'll find out. The point is, Jordan Love, I would start Jordan Love over Tua Tagovailoa, even in this matchup, because that's how bad Tua has been. But they're both so bad this week that I'm actually going to start a running back over both of them in my super flex spot.
That's crazy, Tua, folks.
It is crazy. But Tua has been abysmal, Laquan. Like, last three games, 9 fantasy points, 5 fantasy points, 6 fantasy points. And then he had 12 against the Bills. Ooh, exciting. And then 9 Ooh. Again. And then he had one great game against the Falcons. And then 1.6, 9.6. He has been atrocious. And fantasy managers might look at their lineup and say, or at their app and say, ooh, the Steelers are a green matchup. The Bengals are a green matchup. The Buccaneers are a green matchup.
To everybody else.
maybe we can stream Tua down the stretch. You can't! He stinks! It's incredible how bad he is. Bench the ever-living daylights out of Tua Tagovailoa. If you're in a super flex league where you're considering him, go with a running back instead. Oh, I figured out who it was. It was Chris. It's Chris Rodriguez. I am starting Chris Rodriguez over Tua Tagovailoa.
Hey, and Jordan yo. Love
in my super flex spot.
That's, you know what? They can end up with the same amount of fantasy points. That's not even crazy. Like, that's not even saying. It's win now, folks. It's do or die. Like, these are decisions that need to be made. It may look ugly, but I'd rather a ugly win. Like, it doesn't have to look pretty as long as I get the W. But you sticking with your super flex mind, painting this picture, I have the best upside with a quarterback, blah, 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 blah. Tua stinks. He has been bad for fantasy. He has been losing people weeks if he's been in starting lineups. Even in super flex leagues, he's been losing folks, not carrying his weight as the second quarterback. I look at this as like, I'm not mad at you. I would start Kyle Manungai over a Tua this week. Like, I would not feel okay about, you know, sitting a quarterback. But at the end of the day, Kyle Manungai has been fine in the end zone. Tua has not.
And
moving
Chris,
on.
And so is Chris Rodriguez. To those of you who are in a 2QB or Superflex league and you have Tua, look at his game log as if he's a running back or wide receiver. Imagine in your mind that he's a running back or a wide receiver. Look at his game log, and you'll still be heavily disappointed.
That's those 12 points, though, bro.
Those 12 points. Don't just let the quarterback in if they're not scoring.
Oh, my God. Speaking of quarterbacks, this guy came out of retirement to
put pads.
Take my man Daniel Jones' jersey number. The body is still warm, bro. Philip Rivers. If we see Philip Rivers this week, which I highly doubt because Riley Leonard had a full participation. Practice just Wednesday. I look at it like this. It's a short, short time for Philip Rivers. But what are the expectations for only one pass catcher I care about, right? Michael Pittman. I don't care about Josh Downs. I don't care about Alec Pierce. Michael Pittman is the focus here. What are your expectations with Philip Rivers and Michael Pittman in do or die weeks? We're talking this week, next week, whenever we see Rivers. Championship week, Michael Pittman, Okada.
First of all, just as a clarifying question, do you say only Michael Pittman because you assume Tyler Warren is a must start regardless of who the quarterback is?
I look at Tyler Warren as like we are getting high end tight end two numbers for the rest of the season because he's been quiet. I don't think Tyler Warren to me comes in as a Trey McBride, a Brock Bowers, because he's not going to demand that much volume. He is a high end tight end two rest of the season. I've already closed that chapter, made that book. I've been starting him with Trey McBride in a couple of leagues as my duo tight end situation as a flex tight end spot. Michael Pittman to me is the more, I would say, more worried about, because I feel like we should be able to start him with Rivers because you're getting an upgrade at quarterback, right, from Riley Leonard. So I would think Rivers having the previous chemistry with Pittman in his rookie year, there should be some type of like, I know how you do this. I know how you do that. I know to be here at times. Like, I want to trust Michael Pittman. I'm on my last of like flex wide receiver, three reliable wide receivers I can put out there and win this league.
All right. Here's what I'll say about this situation. Number one, I truly do not know who's going to play at quarterback. I'm getting a sense that Phillip Rivers is going to play.
Wow.
Because like between the him doing press conferences, him getting Daniel Jones's number, that tells me like
crazy.
They clearly intend to activate him. And if they're going to activate him, it's not going to be the backup to Riley Leonard, I don't think. Now, maybe they're setting this all up for the week after this, where he has a chance to learn the playbook for 2 weeks, basically. Maybe that is the case. But let's just assume at some point that Phillip Rivers takes over, because I think that will be the case. What fallout will it have? I don't like it. I don't feel confident. Because, for one thing, just briefly looking back at last week, when Daniel Jones went down in the middle of the game, so there was no preparation for Riley Leonard.
Yeah.
He still targeted Michael Pittman. Heavily. Michael Pittman ended up with 12 targets in that game. He caught 9 for 79. I like that. That he didn't find the end zone.
Yeah, but still, I could do that as a flex.
I like, I like the usage. With Phillip Rivers, I have no blooming clue what we are getting. Are we getting a grandpa who's so out of shape that he can't move in the pocket and his arm strength?
He never could. He wasn't running for nobody.
Exactly. So, I mean, he was certainly never mobile, but now he might not be able to, like,
he'll be in shotgun. Put it like this. He'll be in shotgun for every down. I promise you that.
Correct. My expectation would be that they would go with quick hitting, timing stuff, get the ball out of his hands quickly, not let him get hit, all this kind of stuff. And that, to me, gives me a little bit more confidence in someone like Tyler Warren, maybe even Josh Downs, although he certainly hasn't been good. I'm not saying I'd start him for fantasy, but yeah. I am saying it really hurts for me, the projections for Alec Pierce and the projections for Michael Pittman. I'm not going to start either of those guys the first week that we see Phillip Rivers, whether it's this week or next. And if it's this week, I get concerned about Tyler Warren as well, but I think I'd still start him because of what I just said. I feel like he might end up being the guy that gets the most use. Also, he sneakily might get some trick plays as a quarterback because he is like, he was the emergency QB when this was all going down. Could be fun there. But yeah, I'm very, very worried overall.
Michael Pittman to be continued. All right. Got a little this or that. So some folks may be in a QB bind. I mean, folks, Jane Daniels, he's basically shut down. He's done. I don't know if you were rostering Michael Penix a couple of weeks ago, a month ago, but who knows? You probably ended up with the Sam Darnold, who has been on the decline. But I'm going to ask you about Jared Goff versus the Rams, or does Sam Darnold versus Indy get the start?
Ew.
Ills is right.
Can I choose neither and go with Trevor Mid Lawrence instead?
Hey, he's not available. I think folks were tapped into the show last week because we were barking saying you need to go pick up a Sir William Trevor Mid Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. I will, if I force a choose between these two, I will go with Goff. He is on the road, but he tends to be okay on the road when it's not a really tough matchup and when it is quasi indoors, which is what SoFi is. Like,
Somewhat.
it's sort of indoors, but more importantly, the weather is not going to be an issue because it's Los Angeles. California. It's like, looks out window, 75 degrees and sunny right now.
Yeah, I got a flannel on, but don't get it confused. I'm staying in today. This is just for the pod.
So to me, it's going to be Goff this week. I don't trust Sam Darnold really any given week. And
like, can you explain? Do you like what was happening? Why was my guy just going out there not putting up fantasy points? Like, we're not even getting semi sneaky mobile Sam Darnold anymore. Like, what? Like, what's happening?
I will say what I have been saying all year. I have some Seahawks fans in my corner of the building over the NFL, Laquan. As soon as Sam Darnold and the Seahawks started having this breakout, unbelievable, super efficient MVP candidate nonsense, I said out loud many times, guys, Sam Darnold is going to fall apart when it matters. He stinks. Yeah. I understand that he has these stretches of regular season goodness where he suddenly looks very efficient, but then eventually the other shoe drops and he's not good. And I think we're seeing that now. And we saw it with the Vikings. He just crumbled when the game started to matter. I think we're going to see that again. This game matters quite a bit because they are trying to keep pace at the top of the NFC, and they're playing a team that, despite their lack of a quarterback, it has been good. I just don't see Sam Darnold being reliable. There are so many quarterbacks I typically would rather start than him. Outside of really great matchups. So it's Goff for me. It's Trevor Mid-Lawrence for me. It's probably CJ Stroud for me. Heck, it might be Marcus Mariota for me.
Wow.
He's got a good matchup.
That's crazy talk. I was expecting Bryce Young to fall in there, but Marcus Mariota?
Mariota has been quietly interesting, and he's gotten some rushing value when he's started, and he has a really good matchup against the Giants. So...
His three starts
before the Vikings game, 18.7, 16.4, 24.3 for Marcus Mariota.
That's serviceable.
That is very serviceable.
It scares me, though. It just scares me a little bit.
Well, it should.
I hear you. Let's finish off with my guy, Wandell Robinson. Now, we've seen heavy volume. A lot of folks in the fantasy streets are barking like, hey, get this guy in your starting lineup. So I'm curious of how you feel about with Jackson Dart as the quarterback. Because, folks, don't get all Google eyes and look at those last game logs because Jameis Winston was chucking that ball. I'm a little worried, though, on my end. I'm curious of what you think what Wandell Robinson has to offer this week.
I think he has to offer more or less what he has offered the entire season, which is 8 to 11 targets, which is great. 4, 5, 6, 7, somewhere in that range catches, depending on the matchup and how things go, which is nice. 40 to 70 yards, which isn't great because he's not the most efficient guy. He's an underneath guy. Obviously, in PPR, he's better.
Yeah, that guy.
And then the touchdowns are kind of rare. So, obviously, in PPR, it's a lot better for Wandale. But in half, I still think he's a low-end wide receiver 2, high-end wide receiver 3. He doesn't have a lot of upside most given weeks. He was very good against the Lions two games ago. But most of the year, he has not had that much upside. I will say the matchup against the Commanders is very good. So I think this could be a nice game for the Giants passing attack. But the Jackson Dart versus Jameis point is very important. Jackson, and for fantasy, we like Jackson Dart. And, you know, he's cool and exciting, and he came along with Cam Scataboo, and we feel good about him. But his passing production is not there. Certainly not in the level of James.
Not consistent either. And what worries me, like, on my end was the ADOT. Like, I need Wandell to be utilized deep downfield how we saw Russell Wilson use him. I need Wandell running a 9 route. Even though he is short as ever, he's about as tall as me. But he still was making impact deep downfield on those deep posts. Like, I look at what Winston and Russell Wilson were doing with him, and then you just look at his ADOT, and it's like, it completely shrunk last time we seen them. Like, it's like one of those things like, okay, coming out of that bye, we need to start looking at what worked and what Wandell Robinson has been doing, because that's the Wandell Robinson I need this week. One last one. I got a bonus one for you. A little this or that. Emeka Ebuka or Wandell Robinson?
Yeah, Wandell Robinson. I said the other guy before
the other guy quickly
stated it. But It definitely, if it's Wandale, I'm doing it. And there are a number of other guys that I would do over Mecca Buka, including Jakobi Meyers, who I mentioned, by the way, earlier in the show, who I think is like borderline must start now. But I mean, we talked about Buka earlier. He's been trash, Laquan. Trash. Outside of one game against the Patriots, he has been horrendous for more than 2 months. So I am not playing him basically anywhere.
I got to stump you before we get out of here. I got one for you.
Are you finding someone I will start a Buka over? Because it's going to take a while.
Deebo Samuel or Mecca Buka. Ooh.
Okay. You're getting in the range. Just talk to
Mariota.
You're getting in the range.
That's where I'm trying to live right now. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Mecca Buka is cooked.
I like Mariota. Yeah. I'm not sold on Terry McLaurin, which, by the way, good call by us last week.
Yes. Yes.
After Terry had that blow-up game, and I said, don't believe it. A bunch of it was in overtime. He's going to stink, and he stink.
Hey, chat, we see the comments, and we read them, okay? We spinning back for that. We are victory lapping that because, again, y'all was on our head top before the day even ended. The sun wasn't even down yet, okay? Relax. All right, chat? I appreciate the TikTokers, okay? But we're going to get up out of here, Okada. This is always a great time. Listen, it is the fantasy playoffs. Lock in. It's do or die. Don't get cute. I'm saying this now. I mean, the time of recording, we haven't seen Thursday Night Football, but Emeka Ogbuka is on the bench for Okada for the rest of the season, what it sounds like. But Okada, what are your final thoughts?
I love what you just mentioned. I think that that's something to note. I have a friend who's playing fantasy for the first time this year, and we're in a group chat with a couple of people who play fantasy a bit. And he was looking like on the waiver wire, trying to figure out who to start this week. And he was like, I could maybe play Jalen Wright if Achane is out, or I could pick up Tyrone Tracy to play over DeAndre Swift or Quinshon Judkins. Should I consider doing that? And what I said was, no, you're not starting either of those guys over Judkins or Swift. That is the definition of what we call, quote, getting too cute, end quote. So I love that. This is a time of year where we kind of go back a little bit to what we were talking about earlier in the year, where you start the players that you trust to score points, who have been scoring points for you, and you don't try to get too cute. That means that doesn't mean you just go by name, which is why we talked about Justin Jefferson and Emeka Ebuka, who earlier in the year Ebuka became a great name, and Jefferson obviously already was one. But what it does mean is you look at what has been happening and you make decisions based off that, and you don't try to get too cute in the fantasy playoffs. I like that call out. I think that's something for listeners to pay attention to.
Awesome. Let's lock it in. Don't get cute. Week 15, we'll be back here next week, of course, for week 16. Must need to know and burning questions, and hopefully the fantasy streets can start barking again and hit those fantasy FTN fantasy TikTok DMs for your starting sick questions. We will be here next week. And again, thank you guys for listening. Make sure you guys like and subscribe. We'll be here next week. Peace.